Space Podcast.
What's up, scaredy cats? Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Irrational Fears. I'm Sailor Scarlet, your co-host, and this week we are honoring another winner for No Sleep Teams. So let's get started together so we can find out what scares you.
My name is Jonathan Peters, and I'm dead. At least, I think I am. That's the only way I can think to explain all the things that have happened to me. How things are different now than they were before. It's all a little strange, really. I never really thought about death when I was alive. About the afterlife, about what it means to be living, and what happens to the human body when we're not. You see, it all started after the accident. I guess in some ways I must be kind of a strange guy, because of the way I behaved after the accident, which I realize now isn't the sort of way a lot of people would behave. I was driving up one of the many winding roads in the many green hills in the region when I got distracted. You see, I was heading to an acquaintance's place, whose home was at the top of the hill, and was bringing a gift. A housewarming gift. A plant. I'd placed the plant on top of the console, and when I turned one of the many winding corners on the winding road on my way up the green hill, the plant slid to the left across the console in its pot, and I was worried that it might fall into the passenger footwell. So I did something stupid. I reached across to stop it, and in doing so, took my eyes off the road for just a second, and also turned the wheel ever so slightly, causing my little Puget to veer into the oncoming lane. I thought it wouldn't matter as there was almost never anyone on these roads in the country, but that night there was. I looked up into a pair of oncoming headlights, and the rest was all loud noises and twisted metal and flames and screaming, and I woke up and crawled out from my overturned car, covered in blood. I should have stayed and waited for the emergency crews to arrive, but would it have mattered? Wouldn't they have just put my body in a body bag and hauled it off to the morgue? Then maybe I wouldn't be in the state I'm in now. I just walked away. I walked 10 miles back to my house, limping, covered in blood, and confused. I left my car with flames shooting from the underside up into the chilled night sky. And that's when everything changed. When the strange things started happening. So I figure I died in the accident. But I guess if you're to believe me, I should tell you about the sorts of things that started to happen. It all started the following day. I woke up as usual to the sound of the alarm. I lay in bed too groggy to move. Details of the accident began to emerge from my sleep-fogged memory. The flames, the screaming, the blood. I reached over and hit the off button on the alarm. What a horrible dream, I mused as I got out of bed. I often think of that moment. How blissfully unaware I was, secure in my false assumption. It was the last time I felt normal. I shuffled across the hall to the bathroom, flicked the light switch, and saw my face in the mirror. The reality of the previous night came crashing down on me as I stared at the mask of dried blood and matted hair. I turned on the faucet and splashed water on my face, over and over until the sink was filled with red. I inspected my split lip, my bruised eyes. I had been incredibly lucky. I ran my hands over my body, no unusual angles, no bones sticking out, no pain. No pain. I looked back at my battered face in the mirror. Then I lifted my shirt. My body was covered with huge purple and yellow bruises. But I felt fine. A little tired, maybe, but that's all. I stepped into the shower and washed the rest of the dirt and blood off. While the hot, soapy water ran over me, I thought of the other car. The other driver. I wondered what happened to them. Then I started to worry. I had left the scene of an accident. Surely the police would be looking for me. What if they had died? What would happen to me then? By the time I got out of the shower, I was really starting to freak out. I wondered if I should turn myself in, or call a lawyer or something. I hurriedly got dressed and sat on the edge of the bed to put on my socks, and that's when I noticed my left foot wasn't pointing straight anymore. I tried to push it back. but it wouldn't move. It didn't hurt. Nothing hurt. So I just put on my socks and shoes and left the apartment, locking the door behind me. As I shimmied the key away from the notoriously greedy lock, I was shocked to see that one of my fingernails was bent back, nearly perpendicular with my finger. I winced at the sight, but again could not feel any pain, even as I reached out and plucked the offending claw from its bed. Overcome with a morbid curiosity, I studied it for a moment before flinging it off into the grass. I had to get to the bottom of whatever this was. But first, I needed to find my car and ensure that I hadn't left anyone else to suffer the same fate, or worse. I continued down the path from my front door, stumbling slightly from the new angle my foot had decided to take. I attempted to compensate by shifting most of my weight to the other leg and shambled towards the parking lot on the way to the nearest bus stop. I could only vaguely remember where the accident occurred, and hoped that I might be able to narrow down the possibilities once I was back in the general area. As I walked, I began to feel an odd sensation, a tingling of sorts, just behind my nose. I took a deep breath, attempting to discern if I had more blood clotted way up inside that might be the cause. However, I seemed to be able to breathe without difficulty, though there was a distinct lack of any smell to the air. My head slouched backwards a little as I breathed, and I had to concentrate to keep it from wobbling too much. I figured I must have had a pretty severe case of whiplash. At this upward angle, I could see that the sun was already high in the sky, veering toward mid-afternoon. I must have slept the morning away entirely. It was only then, trying to avoid the harsh rays of the sun, that I realized the true cause of the strange tingling. I hadn't blinked since I first crawled out of bed. I didn't even notice it at first due to my apparent lack of sensation. However, now that I focused on it, I could tell that my eyes were dangerously dried out. I paused as I neared the edge of the parking lot, concentrating all of my energy just to blink my right eye, then my left. My body had seemingly forgotten this required action as I could no longer pick up on the cues. Conversely, I felt no satisfaction from it, as there was no discomfort to be relieved. I made a mental note to force myself to blink every once in a while and return to the task at hand. Across the lot, I spied the familiar bench real estate advertisement of the bus stop and made my way forward. However, as I stepped from the light concrete onto the dark asphalt of the parking area, I saw something that, even with all of the strangeness so far, thoroughly dumbfounded me. My car. Resting comfortably in the same exact spot it had been before my departure yesterday was my Puget, unharmed and utterly unbelievable. I rubbed my bleary, unblinking eyes in disbelief. On this day when all I took for granted was abandoning me bit by bit, here was my trusty Puget waiting for me, an island of normalcy in a sea of strangeness. I shuffled quickly towards it, eager to explore its interior for any clues to how it had survived the crash and returned to that spot. I slid and turned my key into the lock of the driver's side door, but when I pulled on the handle, the door wouldn't budge. I tried again and again. I twisted the key clockwise and counterclockwise and yanked with all my might, growing more desperate and frantic with each failed attempt to gain entry into my car. "Excuse me!" I jumped and whirled around and saw a woman glaring at me. A 30-something blonde in jeans and a black t-shirt that read Mommy and Me Gymnastics. A little girl dressed the same way was holding her hand. "What do you think you're doing to my car?" the woman demanded. "This is my car, lady," I shouted, the words slurring slightly as my tongue struggled to form them. The woman's eyes narrowed as she looked me up and down, and I noticed that they were mismatched. One blue, and the other... its iris was entirely black, like an eerie, unnaturally large pupil. Her daughter was staring at me, and I realized she had the same unnerving variety of heterochromia. The little girl leaned in closer to her mother. "Do you see it, Mommy?" she whispered. After an uncomfortably long silence, the woman finally spoke again. I know you're probably very confused right now. That's not your car. But it's... I stammered. It's right where I left it. What color is your car? She asked me. Her tone was soothing, like she was trying to keep a frightened child calm. Mommy, the little girl said, why are you still talking to that thing? Thing? I cried. Hush now, Amy, the woman snapped. Don't be rude, and don't interrupt again. Sorry, Mommy, little Amy said sheepishly. Sorry, mister. Sir, please, the woman said, addressing me again in that sympathetic manner. Describe your car. It's a blue Puget, I replied, obviously. I'm sorry, she said, but if you really look, you'll see that that's a red Mini Cooper. I did as she said, and God help me, she was right. As plain as day, it was a red Mini Cooper. How could I have thought that was my car? It wasn't just a crooked foot or a loose fingernail or dry eyes or a clumsy tongue. I couldn't rely on my own senses anymore. I started moaning as the gravity of my situation truly hit me. Sir? Sir? I turned back around and the woman and her daughter were still there, each of them looking at me with pity in her mismatched eyes. My name is Jonathan Peters, I told them. I don't understand what's going on. I know you're frightened, Jonathan, the woman said. I'm not sure exactly what's happened to you. All I can tell you is you have to go back to wherever it started. What will happen when I get there? I pleaded. If you're lucky, you might find a way to return to life as you knew it, she answered. Or you may find a way forward. But what does whatever happens, the little girl interjected. You'll learn the truth. I promise, mister. I stared at the pair of them with dumbfounded expectation, forgetting to blink for what normally would have been far too long. Little Amy smiled up at me, grasping her mother's hand and turning back and forth with a curious, innocent wisdom. I turned to look at the Mini again, frozen in confusion, and when I turned back, they were gone. Vanished, like it had all been a figment of my imagination. Was it just my imagination? Can you even have an imagination when you're dead? This was all still far too new to me. I'd read various stories about those on the brink of death gaining the ability to see across the plane of life, to see things not of this world. Could that be what happened to me? It didn't quite explain the lack of sensation, and I briefly remembered a particular scene in Shaun of the Dead. No, I wasn't a zombie. I still had my thoughts. Yeah. But still, something was clearly off about not only my situation, my lack of pain altogether, but my senses in general. Considering I no longer seemed to need to blink, or, now that I think about it, breathe, I realized that, without the need to eat, I didn't really have all that much on my schedule. And I did so want to figure out what the hell was going on. I realized I had been staring at the Mini the entire time. It must have been about 15 full minutes that I was stuck in my head. I glanced around, feeling fortunate that no one seemed to have noticed me. I investigated the area and racked my brain, trying desperately to remember wherever it all started. The magical place that would return me to life, or my way forward. Wait, what was the difference? Was I really on the brink of death? If so, I must have set a new record. Dead for 5 minutes? Please. Hey, Guinness, try a couple dozen hours. Huh. Hey, maybe I'll be famous. Joking aside, I needed to figure out where it all started. It started at the accident, clearly, right? But here I was, in the identical place I knew I had crashed. The very location I made the transition from life to Well, whatever the hell I was now. It had to be the accident, right? I closed my eyes, trying to relive the memory, trying to find any other clue that would give me a direction to where I needed to go. The accident. I had swerved, like an idiot, trying to catch the plant on the way to... Wait. The plant. That goddamn plant. I wish I had never found it. I managed to shuffle down that 10-mile stretch of road without incident. There were a few shouts and curses as I stumbled toward the lane and more than a few people slowing down to ask if I needed help. My drunken-sounding voice was enough to keep them driving. I was lumbering down the road when I finally saw that damn plant. There it was, pristine and standing upright in its shitty little pot. That stupid little succulent just standing there in the middle of a burnt-out section on the edge of the road. Did you know that you can hyperventilate when you're dead? Even if you don't need to breathe, the natural bodily reaction to fear is to hyperventilate and fill the brain with oxygen. This death-addled brain of mine sure needed all the oxygen it could get to comprehend the scene before me. Standing there next to that damn succulent was a crowd of people around two crosses that had been ejected right there on the shoulder of that sleepy, winding back road. One big white cross, and a smaller white cross. What happened? I managed to slur. There was a hit and run last night. The asshole who hit them ran off, said a clearly broken middle-aged man. They figure out who did it? I slowly pushed out. No clue. Both cars were burned out shells when they finally got someone on scene to extinguish the fires, the man said as he fought back tears. I'll kill whoever it was. They killed my wife and daughter last night. I'll make sure they're dead. Damn, I'm sorry, I said as I fought back a storm of suddenly very human and lively emotions. The fear, guilt, and shame spiraled through my cobwebbed mind. The rush of pure emotion and humanity was enough to send me to my knees. The memory of the night before finally rushing into my head. Jesus Christ, I had killed them. I'll fucking kill them for taking my little Amy, the man mumbled as tears rolled down his face. I stared back at him in shock. Amy. That was the name of the little girl I had seen outside of my apartment. He was sobbing openly now, and several people moved to his side, supporting him as he sagged under the weight of his grief. They led him away, and I stood, alone, trying desperately to make sense of it all. My eyes fell on the plant, still sitting improbably in its pot by the side of the road. I walked over and picked it up. I'm not sure why. I guess because it was mine. I noticed that the pot had some scorch marks on it, but the plant itself was unharmed, its spiky leaves shining dully in the sunlight. Hey, Jonathan. I tore my gaze away from the plant. Amy and her mother were standing a few yards away. Their clothes and bodies were horribly burned. They held hands. It was an accident, I whispered. I never meant to hurt you. Amy's blackened lips cracked as she smiled. Do you know what that plant is called? I looked at the plant, confused. No, I said. It's called the Devil's Backbone. Charred flakes of skin drifted off of them in the breeze. It's a bad plant. You should get rid of it. They were starting to shimmer like heat waves on a highway in summer. Wait, I said, taking a step toward them. I don't understand. Get rid of it now, Amy's mother said. And they were gone. I should have done it then. I should have smashed the damn thing to pieces on the ground. But I didn't. Something stopped me. God help me, I brought it home. That night, I couldn't stop staring at it. The Devil's Backbone, what a fascinating name. I couldn't help studying it, caressing it, taking in every detail the way I had the first girl I had fallen in love with, Sometimes hours would go by as I sat in hypnotic stare, and I didn't care how much time passed. Nothing in my life had turned out the way I wanted. I was dead, and now I knew I had taken the lives of two others because of a careless act I could no longer recall. What had become of me? The right thing to do would have been to cry, but no tears came. They had been spent elsewhere, and I felt humanity slipping through my fingers like dry grains of sand. How long would it be before there was nothing left of me? If only I could remember what had happened last night. Now here I was, my eyes locked in gaze with my only hope, this plant that had become like a child's security blanket to me. You know what to do. No, it couldn't be. It had spoken to me, my new love, my only source of answers and comfort, now stroking and soothing my battered conscience. I did know what to do. She had told me. But could I go through with it? I stood and picked up my love, careful not to break any leaves off of her. She was all I had left in a world that no longer made sense to me. My sense of touch had nearly slipped from me completely, just as everything else tied to humanity had fled, but I could feel her. I held the pot close to me and took in a long and gentle breath. The pot was cool, smooth, and familiar. I had needed this contact, this life experience. What a beautiful sensation. She repeated her phrase, and I realized my mission in life had been meaningless. Now I only had a mission in death. You know what to do. Yes, I did. And with that, I left my place. I cradled the ceramic nest of the devil's backbone in both hands, almost too carefully, as though my skin was magnetized to it. I had no idea how long I had spent locked inside, my eyes entranced by the spiraling geometric complexity of each fleshy, barbed leaf. When I stepped out into the cloudy night air, it was just threatening to drizzle. Though I could not sense the few droplets strike my skin, I noticed them slowly begin to darken the concrete path that led toward the roof access ladder, which my unsupervised feet now seemed to follow. My thoughts were muddled from stress and a lack of sleep, but something else too. An almost drug-like haze that shrouded the clarity of my few remaining memories. I smiled contentedly, but didn't know why. A dull, metallic thunk woke me from my stupor, and I realized that my crooked foot had collided with the base of the maintenance ladder that led upwards into the developing drizzle. My hand jerked outwards towards the rung, unasked for, and slammed into the security grate protecting the first few feet from unauthorized climbers. I felt nothing. Regaining control, I inspected the extremity to find the skin on two of my knuckles split open, adding their own dripping contributions to the moistened path below. My other hand, meanwhile, still clutched the plant against my body firmly. I had no control over it. My bloodied hand trembled, seeming to shake off my supervision. It then reached up to take the hold of the steel padlock, tearing it away and bending the metal outward slightly from the force of it. With a long, slow screech, the grate swung open on its hinges, allowing my hand to finally grasp the ladder itself and begin to lift my tired form upward. As I was carried against the rainfall, I observed my fist, seeing there's a dim glow around the broken verge of my skin like the embered edges of burning paper. There was no heat or warmth, merely a faint flickering as I continued to climb. As I ascended the final step out onto the roof of the building, I began to see my skin drift away in little ashen flakes, carried on the breath of the storm. My feet plodded onward, up a flight of industrial stairs and toward the nearest precipice. I never particularly had a fear of heights, but the distinct lack of vertigo as I peered four stories down to the landscaping rocks below unnerved me. It was then that I felt one of the strongest sensations I had in what must have been days. A sudden and crippling panic. I attempted to fight against my own limbs, drawing myself back away from the edge. The plant did not move with me, causing my arms to stretch out in an attempt to drag it back to safety. My clothes were beginning to soak through from what was now a downpour, and my shoes began to slip on the slick surface as I expended my last remaining strength in fertile struggle against the dripping pot. I saw the sharp barbs of the thing begin to glow and burn rhythmically in the same manner as my skin, the same way that Amy and her mother had smoldered away into nothingness. I whispered to the plant desperately, as though attempting to coax a loved one from suicide. I pleaded with it, but it would not budge. My shoes slid closer and closer to the brink, but I was not going to let go. I simply couldn't bear the thought. I heard it again, soft and melodious from every direction. You know what to do. I jumped. I clung onto the potted plant as though it were a life preserver and felt us both plummet toward the ground below. The glow of both my skin and the fingers of the plant grew brighter, the air rushing past us seeming to fan the embers into full, roaring flames just as we struck the rocks. Despite my best efforts to cushion it, the ceramic shattered on impact, along with both of my legs, and too many other bones to count. Still, the only pain I felt accompanied the screaming in my head as I watched the plant smash against the ground, shattering into a wispy pile of ashes. I heard a loud sizzling as the last vestiges of it burned into the rocks, leaving a charred residue. As I watched it disappear, though, the sound only grew louder, and I realized that it was coming from me. My limbs beginning to melt and disintegrate into the ground just as the plant had. I welcomed it, closing my eyes and merely letting go. As the ethereal fire consumed me, I saw a spreading light beyond my eyelids and chanced one last look at this world. A pair of headlights shone brightly in the distance. I was clutching a steering wheel in my left hand and the very edge of a ceramic pot in the right. I felt everything, my heart pounding furiously and pain seared along my skin where I was holding the container. 5 words repeated themselves in my head, in my own voice, fading fast as though from a distant dream. You know what to do. In full control of my body, I slammed on the brakes, struggling against the wheel in a desperate attempt to return to my lane and avoid the oncoming car. The other car, too, began to slow, but not quite quickly enough to avoid the veering back end of my Puget, which slid along the metal of the other car with a screech after denting their driver's side door. When both cars had finally squealed to an uneasy stop, I lay my head down on the steering wheel, taking several deep gasps of air. I felt it entering my lungs, satisfying my need for oxygen. It was glorious. I felt the sting of the seatbelt as it bear-hugged me overzealously into my chair. I felt the adrenaline pouring through me, energizing and exhausting in equal measure. I felt everything. I was alive. Wrong! I felt this too. It was not audible. It only existed inside my brain, and it screamed so loudly that it felt like my skull was expanding with the force of it. Wrong, wrong, wrong. Instinctively, I reared my hand back, dropping the plant to the floor of the passenger side. I was bleeding from a small gash along my index finger, which was oozing with both blood and a sap-like substance that almost seemed to glow, though I'm sure it was merely reflecting the headlights. I sensed the last remnants of a fog clear from the recesses of my mind and would swear I heard the faintest hiss dissolve into the distance before I was left alone with my thoughts. I took another deep breath, then opened the door and stepped out of my car. I saw, a few dozen feet away, a red Mini Cooper at rest just off the road. 2 silhouettes moved inside, one smaller than the other. I began to make my way over to them to ensure they were unharmed, but stopped myself, quickly spinning on my heel and making my way around my own car to the passenger door. Before I could second-guess myself, I reached inside, taking care to avoid the barbs as I took hold of the thing. I whirled toward the thick line of trees disappearing down the hill, raised the pot above my head, and hurled it as hard and as far as I possibly could, hearing a few dull impacts followed by the shattering of ceramic. I then made my way back to the red car, just as the two figures were climbing out. "Oh my God, I'm so sorry. I just lost control for a second there. Are you two all right?" The woman, flustered but unharmed, looked at me, and seeing my obvious penitence, relaxed slightly. Yeah, we're okay. We're both okay." The small figure stepped out of the darkness, rubbing her arm where she must have braced herself against the crash. I recognized them both, of course. I smiled in relief. "You have no idea how glad I am to hear that. I can't believe I was so stupid back there. My name is Jonathan Peters, and I'm gonna make this right. I'm so sorry for this." The woman took a step forward and held out a hand. "Well, we can figure all of that out once the police get here, but it's all right. We're all right. I'm Lisa, and this is my daughter, Amy." I knelt down and held out my hand to the girl. "Amy, I'm very glad you're alive." "Wrong." I felt it in the deepest part of my mind, blinking the word away. She smiled sheepishly and took my hand in hers. And as she did, I felt the slightest tingling in my index finger. And when I pulled my hand back, I saw that finger twitching back and forth like a flickering fire. I smiled again and slid my right hand into my pocket to hide it. I could still feel it, though, moving against my will. A burning sensation seemed to creep up inside the veins of my arm, and I felt a hissing voice grow louder as the heat continued to spread. "You know what to do." The police came shortly after, and Amy and her mother had left. But the voice never has. And I know now that I'm dead. Dead inside and out. And that no matter what I do, I'll never heal. Once again, and as always, thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Irrational Fears. I'm your co-host, Anthony Luciano, and that was another winner of No Sleep Teams, this one called My Name is Jonathan Peters, and I'm Dead. This one was captained by Reddit user The Itch, and obviously written by a team of No Sleep authors. You can find more information about all of the authors, including the captain and everybody else that contributed to the story, in the show notes down below, as well as plenty of new ways to support us, including just leaving reviews on iTunes or Patreon if you're really feeling it, down in the show notes as well. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and subscribe to us on YouTube and VidMe, where we are also putting up all of the episodes if you prefer to listen that way. Or if you have friends that you want to listen, but they prefer YouTube, we're doing that as well. And of course, as always, we'll see you next time so that we can find out together what scares you.